My name is Chris Main, M-A-I-N, and I'm with Major General C.B. Ware, W-A-R-E, and General Ware, D.S.O., C.D. He's a former colonel of the Regiment of Princess Patricia's Canadian Light Infantry, and General Ware is also commanded the Princess Patricia in Italy as Lieutenant Colonel then. And the date today is 25 June 1979, and we're at the University of Victoria in the Clarity Building. And General Ware, last time we were together, which a long time now, but last time we were together, I think we had you floating in the Mediterranean. You were number two, you were the major, second in command of the PPCLI, and you were on your way to Italy. And your boat was torpedoed, I believe. And as you said, you watched the ships sail majestically by as you floated in the water. I was wondering if we could pick up from there. What you recall of it?
Well, the whole reason for being there, of course, Chris, was I was commanding OC troops, as they call them, on the ship, and part of the LOB, left out of battle principle. COs and second in command didn't travel together. I was OC ships on this freighter, which had not very many troops, but had a great many vehicles and a good deal of ammunition for the invasion. But troops were, it wasn't a question of having companies or anything. There were odd people from many regiments.
Will this be a headquarters type of?
Well, it was
similar to, or?
I was second in command, and yes, such was CO of the ship, and your other people were on it. Were all, they'd have a second in command of a company, one sergeant, whereby there are three in the company, there'd be one sergeant and one sergeant major.
Now this would be divine, so that for sinkings.
So if you lost any main part of a unit, there was always a replacement to step in and reform,
as opposed to putting all your eggs in the one basket.
So that's the only reason for this ship. And of course, as far as the equipment was concerned, it was, again, was a mixture. General Simmons lost about half his signals vehicles, which rather irritated him.
Wisely,
we lost a few guns, and but it was carefully planned as to what was in each ship, and what you lost was a very measurable loss. But it wasn't everything
that
you'd
say.
No, we.
In the water, we got this on the tape last time, you were mentioning that the morale and the conduct of the people in the water was first class, is that correct, sir? On your ship, the ones that...
Yeah, well, we were very fortunate. Doug Harkness, the former Minister of National Defense, he was on another ship that got torpedoed, and it was the first one, and they had a Lascar crew, and it sank very quickly, I mean, a matter of 20 minutes, I think. And Doug got a George Medal for his effort. The crew naturally deserted the ship, and I think first to the boats and away. And well, ours, we were torpedoed, and it hit in the bow, and of course a great sheet of flame struck up, and ammunition started exploding. And I think I perhaps told you, one thinks if you get torpedoed that everything goes all at once and that's the end of it. Well, it was the worst part of it, really, was waiting for the torpedo to strike, because after the Harkness ship was hit, well, we went on for another 20 minutes to half an hour before the blow struck. Well, I say this great sheet of flame and explosions on it. There were a few people killed in the bow, and the rest of it, the ship was just burning hard, and you were able to organize people into their action stations and boats away, and of course rafts.
Well, the conduct of the men, though, in the water, that was first class. Is that correct, sir?
Oh yeah, no trouble there. We lost very few. There were only two people drowned, I think. But it was a very eerie feeling. As I said, the captain and I, in the best naval tradition, shook hands after everybody got off and climbed down a rope, and the sides of the ship were heaving in and out and ran hot, and we were very glad to hit the water. And the water was quite warm, and We swam to a raft. I never saw the captain again. We swam in different directions and swam to a raft, and he just hung on to the edge of the raft, and there were some people on the raft and the rest just hanging around him. I have no idea how long this was. It seemed forever, of course. I think it was about 6 hours, and very fortunately a corvette came back and picked up the survivors. And it was a very crowded corvette.
Now, you had opened your battle orders prior to the torpedoing.
Yeah, that was rather unfortunate. That morning, we had the 4th of July, we were landing on the 10th, and so on the 4th, I had this great set of bags, and we opened the bags, lock and key, and got out all the maps, and got all the troops together and briefed them on the whole operation.
What
so they were
with
all
the orders? What did you do with the actual orders? Did you try and destroy them, or you knew they would be destroyed in the ship?
They were destroyed in the ship.
So you didn't worry about trying play any of those espionage type things?
No.
You didn't have a shredder in hand?
they were well in the heat. Nobody ever got back to their cabin again.
But now you, after this, you went to North Africa, is that correct?
Well, the ship took some time to sink, and then we were picked up, and we were taken and didn't know where on earth we were, but it was, in fact, it was Algiers. I knew that people having been briefed, and we were met by somebody from the British headquarters there, who presumably knew that there was an operation, and they were sure where, but I said these people have been briefed for an operation, and so they must be securely placed somewhere. So net result was we were put into a prison camp, surrounded by barbed wire.
How did the men react to that, sir?
Well, actually, there wasn't much. You didn't have very much to react to because you knew you were briefed and you were put into this thing, and your sole clothes was. I had a pair of shorts. You'd kicked your shoes off and your socks and. Pair of shorts, period, and they were all in that state. And I think a lot of us who hadn't been through the ranks for a long time finally found out that what happens the day after, when we spent rather a miserable day or so there, and then they finally issued us with two pairs of socks, two pairs of shorts, one shirt, one pair of boots, and that was it. It's surprising how little you can live on when you have to. We were there for a week or so, and I was agitating. It was very difficult to deal with anybody because nobody knew why you were there or what you were doing. And I finally got into the headquarters in Algiers and got a British general, whose name I've forgotten completely, and who knew about the operation at the point, and said, "Here they are. As soon as it's over, please get them out to their units as quickly as possible. In the meantime, I like to turn over to somebody and get on my way. I don't feel very sporting sitting in a camp when you're D-Day." And he says, "You're going to be too late for D-Day anyway." So,
well, what about being kitted out now for the officers? I mean, this is fine for the other ranks. They get a whole new set of uniform and things. Now, what about you people?
Well, there wasn't that much difference.
Just your battle dress, they wouldn't have to worry about that too much.
I remember great luxury. About 3 months later, a British kit shop came out to Italy, and I got a pair of shoes. I remember that was a great luxury when you could finally got a pair of shoes. I only had this one pair of army boots all this time. But uniforms weren't any problem because it was shirt, shorts. In fact, it wasn't shorts any longer after malaria struck us. Everybody was issued. It was a crime to wear shorts after Sicily.
Yes.
But I got out myself. That's my... beat my way down to the docks and nothing. I just got on a boat going for Sicily, and it was a landing craft.
You had no difficulty getting on this vessel.
Everything was going one direction, and I just said, "I got to get to Italy or to Sicily." So The captain was probably a sub-lieutenant in the Royal Navy. Said, hop aboard, and over I went, and I landed there, I think, a couple of days after D-Day.
So it was the start of the third week, I guess, third week of July, 1914?
I would think it was about middle, probably 14, 15 July.
15 July, 1943. Where did you land?
Very busy scene. Beaches, I have no idea where.
Just the beaches.
On a very, very busy beach, and it was very interesting to see how these beaches were organized after having gone through all the studies and all the rehearsals. And they had their beach bricks and beach blocks all organized, and a great mass of activity, and fortunately no air raids at that particular point on the beach, and supplies were being unloaded.
Now this would be in Sicily itself.
I ran into a sergeant major in the, I should have brought my own book, I suppose, which I haven't looked at for many times.
So you ran into a sergeant major of what?
I ran into a sergeant major in the Patricias who was down overseeing getting some supplies, and I rode up to the battalion on the back of his motorcycle.
Have a way to enter a war,
and
eh?
presented myself to the commanding officer. And
who was?
There's a fellow called Bob Lindsay, who was later in the British Allied military government, is now in Germany for a long time, and now back in Canada and back in Victoria.
Hmm. So. Now, according to Colonel Stacy's map, map 5, page 165 in the Canadians in Italy, and I guess it's Nicholson and Stacy, it's not just Stacy.
Yeah.
Just check.
Yeah.
It's volume 2, and it is, I call them all Stacy, but actually this is by Lieutenant Colonel G.W.L. Nicholson. And according to map 5, by about the 22nd, I believe, of July, the PPCLI were just south of Enna, and the Canadian Infantry Division was coming up from, can you pronounce that, sir?
Valguanera.
With the Sea Force, PPCLI, and according to the map here, on 20 July, the PPCLI took Mount
Rossi.
Mount Rossi.
Rossi, yeah.
Do you recall any of that at all, sir? You would just be hitting the battalion at this particular time.
And this was,
was this a few days later?
It was not terribly heavy fighting at the start when I landed, you see. The first troops met were Italians.
Mm-hmm.
And,
no difficulty there.
The Italians were, their heart was not all that much in it, I think. And we proceeded on this advance up here, and I remember the first time we met the Germans, it was a slightly different kettle of fish.
The war was a
picnic up that time. Italian generals, I remember the first Italian general surrendering to me, it was all very sort of clicking of heels and presenting his pistol, and so on. That was the end of that part. And then when we met the Germans, of course, the thing...
Okay, well, let me get this in order for myself now. You joined the battalion around the middle of the month of July.
Mm-hmm.
You come up, I gather you were welcomed warmly. That you'd
Once again, this LLB thing came in and left out of battle. The second in command was left out of battle, and so it wasn't as if you were with the battalion headquarters. And you were left out of battle again. You were back with whoever was there, as I say, second in command of a company or
mm-hmm.
company commander on occasion.
And what would you be doing? The administrative paperwork?
Well, it was back in B echelon. Second in commands were supposed to be mostly administrative.
Do you want to get into the fray there at all?
Oh, yes, indeed. I spent most of my time up there, but on the other hand, you couldn't get in the way, and you...
couldn't get wounded, otherwise you'd be in trouble.
But effectively, I mean, you were administrative, really.
What types of things would you be doing? I know it's maybe not as exciting, but I think it's important. What type of administrative things do you recall?
Make certain that the battalion has the every bit of equipment, ammunition, food, etc., that the whole thing runs smoothly behind. We've got a quartermaster, thank God, to to operate for you, but your job really was to see that the battalion lacked nothing it needed to do to fight, which wasn't always very easy. It was easy then because you didn't have reinforcement problems. We didn't have the... your casualties were relatively light as long as you were up against battalions. And
you said the Italians are very good at surrendering at this point, is that correct?
Yeah.
And you...
And then, of course, they packed the whole thing in later when I'd forgotten the date and put their manual. I'm afraid I should have prepared myself a little bit for this.
You stay in this, pretty much in this position until August 1943, is that correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you are promoted. Now, what are the circumstances for your promotion as half colonel, or lieutenant colonel, I should say?
Well, when you got...
I'll get a new map here.
Well, those were all. I mean, that Leon 40 was a sort of...
Still reviewing map 5, big, Leon 40.
That was the big battle, really, in Sicily, the key one, mm-hmm. for Canadians.
And you were with the Edmontons?
The Edmonton Seaport. Regiment got in there, and... into Leon 40 and stopped in the Patricias. It was a terrific valley just south of Leon 40, and Leon 40, of course, was another hill town, and it was a very brave action on the part of a fellow called Roland Coleman, who was later my second in command. He was commanding C Company, and he loaded his troops on trucks and so on, and down a winding road over a bridge and so on into the battle, and sort of linked up with the Edmontons, and who were in a rather bad way at that point. They were stuck, period, and were rather delighted. So Roland's company got in, and the rest of the battalion followed in and cleared out Leon 40, and that was a sort of key point at that time.
Now, where would you be stationed at this time? I gather you were up where you were
supposed to
be.
Actually, I was up in Leon 40, yeah.
You weren't supposed to be there, though, is that correct?
Well, I don't... You should go up and see what's happening, you know. You're to see what's required. No, I spent most of my time in Leon 40, I must say. The rest of these, they were all tough battles, but they're not great battles. I mean, Ajira was a great street fighting battle, and this was really it was great street fighting experience. Anjira, strangely enough, but once again, not a terribly great battle.
What about acclimatization and things like that? Were you having much casualty due to weather and pestilence and things like that?
Well, the heat was the, course, coming out from England on ship, you did your best with PT on the spot, which was packed on the sort of ship I was on, which was a small freighter. I mean, you were literally doing your PT on the spot, trying to keep people healthy. And of course, the first thing when you hit Sicily was the great heat, which we're very definitely not used to. I don't think there were any excessive casualties due to heat, but it was a very different climate. And things like fruit and oranges, which you hadn't seen for 3 years,
How were the
health was all right until malaria was the
my father still suffers from malaria.
First thing.
What about the reaction of the Sicilian people? I find difficulty using the word liberator in the sense that were you treated as liberators or conquerors or what? Do you recall?
Oh, we were treated really as soon as the Italians, as soon as the king, or excuse me, my lady, as soon as the King Victor abdicated, they threw their hand in that way. Of course, Sicilians had no desire to have anything to do with the Germans except get out from under, and which they sometimes were successful in doing, but otherwise I wouldn't say the Italian, the Sicilian would say, mm-hmm. treated you more as a liberator than anything else. They're not natural allies, Germans and Italians.
Was there much theft?
They were made so.
Was there much theft in Sicily by the civilian population with your stuff?
Yes, a Sicilian will steal anything. If you ever had anything, any stores, anything like that, had to be guarded very carefully because they will steal anything, sell anything.
Was there a great black market at this time? Or?
Not that I know of. No, I never got involved in it. I suppose there must have been people selling cigarettes. I don't particularly remember it at that time.
You too high up in rank to get involved with that.
I believe then if you're a CO, you definitely aren't involved in that sort of stuff. You never to see that other people aren't. There were obviously a lot of people who were involved in it. But I don't think, Cicely, I don't really think there was all that much. You may have heard more from other people.
Well, I just wondered. We'll take a pause here for 30 seconds. We're back on. Change chairs for a moment.
I'm afraid I'm not much help here in the black market thing. I do know later in the war, especially in Holland and so on at the end, I guess you know there was enough sort of court marshals and that sort of thing. That was on a very large scale. I don't really think it hit infantry units and things as such. Somebody might sell cigarettes or something else. I don't, God knows why or what.
Now
looting. I don't think we never thought of looting. Occasionally, I mean, you didn't think of it. I mean, you came on things, and of course in Sicily. One thing one noticed immediately was that every house that had been gone through and littered, and there were a bunch of bank receipted checks and so on from America. They were all receiving money from America, these families. But possessions, if you're traveling as the infantry do lately and so on, you aren't carrying around. You may, I remember very valuable things, but we sort of saw them, left them, that's it.
Okay. August 1943, you're promoted to Lieutenant Colonel of the regiment, and you take over. Now, what are the circumstances around that?
Well, Bob Lindsay'd been commanding the battalion for, obviously, since 1942, I think. Mm-hmm. And it was the first campaign over and out, and there was quite a shake-up, as you know, all through the piece. General Penhill left 3rd Brigade. He went back to England.
Now, would this be due to, it's one thing to command at peacetime and it's another to command at wartime? Is that what you're getting at, sir?
No, I think it was just a matter of having got the campaign underway, and I'd say there was quite a shake-up. Some people left, some people were promoted. Mm-hmm. General Simmons left for 5th Division, and General Volks left 2nd Brigade, so that automatically left Colonel Hoffmeister, later General Hoffmeister, became Brigade Commander. I might say a very good one, too.
Now, what happened
Lindsay went back to England.
He went back to England?
Yeah.
Okay. Where now, so you were number two, so you were...
And I was number two, so and I was promoted.
To Lieutenant Colonel.
Yeah.
And so you're promoted to Lieutenant Colonel. And what is your first recollection of taking over? Do you recall what you did first?
Yeah, it was the end of the campaign, so over and out, we were in a bivouac area, quite free, no enemy problems, no anything else, and just getting ready to go to Italy, rather sooner than we expected, I think, and rather sooner than the planners had anticipated. So it was a question of really reorganizing the battalion, officers killed, sick, missing, troops, so on, and you had this period in which to get ready for Italy. I don't know, the first thing I was naturally overjoyed, I was 29 or 30 the day I took over or something, and that's what you spend your life as, dreaming you command your battalion. So I suppose the first thing of...
Is that the best command, seriously? I've heard people say that the best, the dream command of the command is the battalion. Is
that's the best personal command, because after that you lose the... You lose quite a bit of the personal touch, but in the battalion, well, you know everybody, and you know all your officers, and they know you, and they're all supporting you, and you're certainly supporting them, and it's the last personal command you can have. When you've got a brigade, well, indeed you love all the troops, the three battalions, and mm-hmm. so on, but you've lost that personal touch. You're dealing more with three commanding officers and the gunner and
now who was your brigadier then?
Chris Folks.
So how did you get along with General Folks?
Oh good. I was a G1 after the war in 47, 48, 49, and
there was no difficulty on that score.
Oh no.
What about your liaise with the other two battalions? Now we were talking about the Eddies and the Sea Force here?
Oh yeah, we were always very close. Bert Hoffmeister was a great friend of course, and the Edmonds were commanded by a fellow called Jim Jefferson, mm-hmm. once again Victoria, who now died. Mm-hmm. He was in the, went back to civilian life in Edmonton. And Bert Hoffmeister, I guess you know, became president of Macmillan Bodell, and then
mm-hmm.
then he became something else. And British Columbia agent general, I think. And now he's still in Vancouver. But Bert was... He was very young. I mean, he was older than I was, but I mean, he was mm-hmm. young. We thought Chris Folks was older than God, of course. He's 10 years older than I was.
He wasn't older than he was God.
He graduated from RMC with General Simmons there in the same class, and we thought they were terribly old. I suppose he was 39, 40. So he went on to the division, and... let's say Penhale left. I think General Graham left 1st Brigade. I'm trying to think who became CEO of the Sea Force. I definitely should have looked this up for
you. Well, it's in the book.
But
then we can find that in the book. Now, the first thing that I see coming up here is you're going to hit the beaches on 5 September and 43 in Italy. And you're going to... Reggio? Reggio. Monte di Reggio. My pronunciation should be scandalous. But anyway, you're going to Monte Reggio. But the thing is that after you land, you got a 20-mile march uphill from the beaches, according to Nicholson's book. Do you recall any of that?
Yeah, well, that was quite a feat. It wasn't only 20 miles.
Up the
spine of Italy.
Well, first of all, now where would you land? Would you be landing at Lockery there, or?
It was,
bring the map 7.
It was almost like a regatta. We had lots of time to prepare troops for it, but we didn't have all the things we should have had. Maps, for example. That's why I say I think perhaps we got there a little quicker than I expected. Great many of your maps were tourist road maps, and we didn't have any. We were not supplied with the proper military maps for this great campaign.
Now, first of all, I guess the thing is that now where did you load up on the ship? I guess, do you recall?
We were in Taormina. Yeah, I've got a map of Sicily here. Where are we? We were in Taormina. No, that doesn't cover it, no. No, this is where we landed to start. And, memory, we left, I think it was north of Catania, mm-hmm. between Catania and Taormina.
What kind of ship?
Recall
the types of ships, sir?
They were landing craft, landing ships, infantry, they called them, and it was an absolutely unopposed mm-hmm. crossing. Gorgeous sunshiny day.
Era of a regatta,
practically. No opposition. Well, you see, the Italians had packed it in, and the Germans obviously weren't going to fight on the beaches.
They
were far better ground to fight inland, if you're...
Now, where did you land, do you recall?
Troops. I think it was around this Locri. It was Reggio, I mean, it was the whole general area on beaches.
The landing was no difficulty. It was just straightforward, no opposition.
Not the slightest. Not the slightest. Formed up on the beach.
Okay, now we're talking 5 September 1943. You're formed up on the beach, you're mm-hmm. landed, you're raring to go, and it's mm-hmm. uphill. So what do you do?
We walked. 20 miles, I remember. I think we did 105 miles in 3 days.
Well, according to Colonel Nicholson's book here, you land, you go 20 miles march uphill from the beaches,
mm-hmm.
and you get the Militio Gambrady Road or something near Reggio, Monte di Reggio. Then, with very little rest or no rest, and with a very small amount of transport, you go another 16 miles north on foot.
Yeah.
What was it like? First of all, were you walking?
Yeah. Our transport, if any, was exceedingly limited.
So the colonel of the regiment's walking as well.
Yeah.
Were you grumbling about all this?
No, we were just trying to get there, but quick. That's why I say this 105 miles, I obviously can't disagree with Nicholson. He was studying this. If you'd like, I'll go back and study my records and come back and perhaps give you a bit. All I can do is give you an impression now, Chris.
Yes.
We landed there, we had little or no transport, and we were packing everything and...
The Martians grew, I gather.
Miles out. And all bridges were blown, of course. We used motorcycles. We acquired Italian motorcycles of our own, and there were some pretty great feats crossing these gullies and the things. I remember we rigged up things to take rations across and to take motorcycles across, and I remember being the lead battalion there. We'd send motorcycles fanning in all directions up to these little villages, and they hadn't even had time to cut phone lines or anything. You get reports back straight over the telephone. We got more intelligence in a short time.